This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.
Now, we have with us to debate three eminent persons. We have Dr. Hilary Steedman, who has been writing about this sort of thing for years. Dr. Steedman's right is Dr. Matt Grist. And then on to Chris Moorcroft. So, can I ask Dr. Steedman to kick us off with 7 minutes? I realise 7 minutes isn't very much, but these are tasters to start us thinking and to start the kick the debate off. Hilary.
Thank you. Well, I want to start with the profound concern that I think we see reflected in the media and in everybody's lives, really, about education in this country, and particularly the education we provide for some of our young people. And our greatest concern, I think we can see, focuses on those at either end of the spectrum of the educational, of the spectrum of educational achievement. I think we can see that too many very able students are underachieving, and too many less able students are underachieving. And I would just refer you to the PISA studies of maths and reading, which show how this we compare on these measures with other countries. I think both of these groups suffer from poverty of aspiration. And that I also think that the less able present a greater but equally important challenge. The path to success for the very able is well marked and well understood. But the less able face a catastrophic lack of clarity and direction with respect to the very legitimate goals which they have for their lives. Those goals are well-rewarded occupation based on a recognised skill that will enable them to prosper and progress in work. Now, at present, half of all 16-year-olds do not aim for higher education at 18, and these are the people we're talking about. Alison Wolfe's report has made clear that a substantial number of these young people, she reckons about a third of every cohort, fail to gain any useful qualification by age 18. They dip in and out of education, employment, and unemployment. And this has very serious consequences for education, for the education system, and for schools much, much earlier on in children's lives. Frequently, confusion and disillusion set in early. I think we've all seen this in school. Poor motivation, particularly from age 14 onwards, it's not restricted to age 14 onwards, but poor motivation, truancy, cutting classes, just giving up, is especially marked from age 14 onwards. And this is a much greater problem in this country than it is in many other European countries and also Commonwealth countries, English-speaking Commonwealth countries. These young people need clear direction supplied by a route that just does two things. It should clearly lead to good labour market outcomes, and it should offer progression, either through education or a work-based route, to more advanced achievement. What I'm talking about here is an option to continue into some form of tertiary education, perhaps in a continuing education framework, but not closing off any routes. Now, in most other European countries, these two things, labour market value and progression, are the recognised goal for everybody. And I think if we had looked even 10 years ago, we could have looked at France, Germany, Sweden, and seen that they have well over 80% of their young people gaining, by age 25, a level 3 qualification. 10 years ago. Today, we can't get more than half of our young people to a similar level of qualification. And that is a clear failure. Now, labour market value, I've been talking about, it can be constructed from a strong technical and or occupational bias to a strong programme of learning based on the fundamental subjects of mathematics, language, and science. And we can see that this is possible. I've visited a large number of apprenticeship centres, colleges of further education, schools in other European countries and in the United States. I won't talk about the United States. I've seen there young people who do not find that academic work comes easily, but they persevere and they are able to reach a useful standard in all these things, mathematics, language, and science. And I think that Alison Wolfe has done us a great service by pointing out the need, the necessity for this core of serious study to continue for all students. Starting such a programme at age 14, when we need to give motivation to young people, could lead to a full level 2 outcome at age 16 or age 17 or age 18. Why must we oblige people to take GCSE and fail it so that they can then take it and pass it? It's nonsensical and it's extremely demotivating. So that's the sort of vision that I'm suggesting. I don't know where it would be taught. I think that is secondary. Perhaps eventually some schools and colleges might choose to specialise on this particular route. It would require quite substantial investment in plant and in staff. But my view is that this is the way to bring coherence and purpose to the preparation of young people for a fulfilling and productive working life. Thank you.
Thank you, Hilary. And then I will invite Dr. Matt Grist to give us his thoughts.
I'm going to sort of echo a lot of what Hilary said, in a way. Is 14 the new 16? Yes, it is already for about 60 to 70% of students who go on to get studies to level 3 or above, because they start thinking about their options at 14 and they make informed choices which shape their educational trajectories. The problem is there's nothing like that for the bottom, I don't want to say bottom, but the lower achieving students in the bottom 30 to 40%, they don't make any informed choices, they just fail at stuff and then find themselves at 16 and they fall off a cliff. And what happens then is they go in, because the youth labour market has collapsed, there's no more 16, 17, 18 year old employment, they go on to FE colleges and do courses really designed for adults, pass-fail courses, low-level MVQs with no labour market value, as Hilary said. Short courses, there's no coherence, there's no arc of learning, there's no developmental kind of thread to what they're doing, and then they're just in a holding pen for 2 years. And we want a system that serves those students as well as the other kinds of students that we have. But we don't need to go back to a kind of 1944 Education Act style, you know, three kinds of institutions, three strict routes. We just need to provide a set of different options that serve young people's different needs. And I think we need to just be pragmatic about that and accept that most of what we need is already in place. We just need to beef it up and strengthen it. Now, I think in terms of qualifications, I would think in terms probably of four main routes. The first would be EBAC, something like EBAC, with GCSEs and A-levels university. We all know about that route. The thing about EBAC is it's probably only for the top or for 30% of the most academically able students. So I don't fear it dominating the educational landscape. I actually see it as an opportunity to diversify because it is only for the most academically able. And it's right that the most academically able should have a route for them. The second kind of route I would say would be other GCSEs, or including vocational GCSEs, going on to A-levels and things like BTEC Nationals, and you might call that the technical route or the managerial vocational route or something. A third route, I would say, would be higher diploma going on to advanced diploma, or higher diploma going on to higher apprenticeships, and you might call that the vocational or craft route. Now, there should be a fourth route, but there isn't. That fourth route would be what we did with that lower performing 30 to 40% of students at the moment that we don't do anything with. I don't know what that route would look like, but I don't think we've put much thought into it. And what we really need to put thought into is what happens post-16, and we really need to think about designing coherent courses of study for those students at 16, which should include much more ambition about English and maths, I agree. So that's what I think it should look like. Where would it happen? I think it would mainly happen in schools, but I think we should have other institutions that offer the opportunity to move out of school at 14. University technical colleges, I think, are a great innovation. Things like studio schools based in FE colleges, specialist schools in performing arts and so on. Why should we have these different kinds of institutions? Because at 14, some young people sort of start to reject the didactic methods of school, and they're rejecting because they're becoming mature early and they don't want to sit there and learn passively anymore. They want a different kind of learning, and we should see that maturity for what it is and welcome it and try and build on it rather than sort of slap it down, as it were. So I think we do need a significant minority of students able to change institution at 14, change their learning environment, and I think we should welcome that and expand what we already have. So what we need, I think, is diversity in the offer. I think EBAC is an opportunity. It is not going to make everyone study the same route. It's actually going to open up space for other routes. I think, as the other speakers have said, key to all this is a core of English and maths for all the routes. Okay, so it's not just that if you're in this fourth route that I said doesn't really exist, you don't do English and maths. It must be key to that route that you do English and maths, and that the best pedagogues, as it were, are teaching English and maths to those children so that they can raise those skills as high as they can. I think that's key, and there's been a sort of dichotomous way of thinking in the past where more vocational routes don't include working on their skills, and I think that's very damaging. Also key, though, is objective and high-quality information, advice and guidance at 14. We did some research with some schools around the country, around England, and we found that a lot of schools don't even tell kids about apprenticeships. Teachers are so focused on GCSEs and A-levels that they didn't even tell kids about their options. Meeting with careers advisors was intermittent. It often happened very late, at 16 even, or 15 or 16, when kids would say, well, I wanted to do an apprenticeship or a higher apprenticeship, and now I realise I can't because I didn't prepare in the right way. So we need information and guidance to start earlier and to be much more objective and informed by the labour market and much more professional in the sense of including guidance as well as information. For at-risk young people, I think we need mentoring and one-to-one support starting at 14. I wouldn't suggest we have some kind of national programme. I would suggest that we have a national franchise, something along the lines of Big Brother, Big Sister, which operates in the US and operates in Germany, which sort of amalgamated existing organisations. We met some people at an organisation called Bolton Lads and Girls Club, which was an excellent organisation, loads of local knowledge, really engaged with young people, helped them stop them disengaging with education and, you know, going down the wrong track. A national franchise along the lines of Big Brother and Big Sister would just provide economies of scale for those kind of already existing grassroots organisations, which do a great job. I think in terms of accountability, I said we need a diversity of measures. I would go with EBAC, something like a higher diploma, although it will take a while for diplomas to take off. 5 GCSEs, just English and Maths GCSE would be a good measure, rather than 5 GCSEs including English and Maths, because that crowds out space for other kinds of learning. And I think schools should start collecting data on progression into apprenticeships. If we're going to think about that, the vocational route is more valid, then we need to see how schools do at getting kids onto apprenticeships and how those kids do once they're in apprenticeships as another kind of accountability measure. Where am I? So I think we need diversity of institutions. I don't think the debate about free schools and academies and LEA controlled schools is the most important one. I think it's about offering institutions where a student can move to at 14 if they want another kind of learning. I think is key to create diversity with those kind of institutions. I think we need good teacher continuing professional development. That's key, actually. It's no good trying to implement these changes if you don't train teachers and give them the time to take responsibility for these routes and the different kinds of skills that are needed to make these routes effective. And we need to stipulate at a national level senior management team commitment to making these kind of routes work. I think we need many more horizontal initiatives, and by that I mean things like London Challenge, where all the government does is pay for time for teachers or lecturers or whatever it may be, to go somewhere else and share best practice. I think sharing best practice horizontally is the way to improve standards in pedagogy and assessment for these different routes. The way is not a sort of nationally implemented top-down reform. I've said that I think we should have a national franchise like Big Brother, Big Sister for mentoring. And just finally, I think I agree wholeheartedly with Tim about apprenticeships. We need good quality apprenticeships that are employer-led but educational, in that they have good quality educational elements so that transferable skills can be learned, and they need to be long enough duration so that they're fitting for 16 to 19-year-olds rather than for adults who are just trying to rebadge their skills. I don't know why the government just doesn't listen to what Tim says on apprenticeships, but never mind. So in summing up, yes, 14 is the new 16, but not for all students. To make it the new 16 for all students, we need to really put some thought into developing curricula and progression routes for the sort of academically less able, the lower achieving students that are currently not served well by the system at all. Ken Spurs talked about concentrating on the middle students, and now the coalition wasn't going to concentrate on those students anymore. Well, one consequence of concentrating on the middle is that the bottom gets no service either. And to my mind, I don't see why you can't concentrate on the whole spectrum of students. I just see that as a false dilemma, to think that you can only concentrate on the middle at the expense of everything else. But anyway, that's my bit.
Thank you very much. Chris, would you like to give us your thoughts?
Thank you. I have some slides which may appear as if by magic, and I just need to see the bullet points as they come up. So that's great. So 7 minutes. What can you do in 7 minutes? Not a lot. So I'm going to keep it quite simple, but quite controversial. How good are GCSEs? Are the first question. I've been in further education, and I've taught a bit in schools, and I've taught in sixth form colleges. And as president of the Association of Colleges, I represent the English sixth form colleges and further education colleges. And in the short of 40 years, my impressions really haven't changed a huge amount. The first thing I'd say is GCSEs are not a good instrument in a lot of ways. I know Ken Spurs said he thought that most young people value GCSEs. I think the ones that get them value GCSEs. But, I mean, around 40% of young people are not going to get those 5 A-star to Cs. And if you include English and maths, you get even less than 5 A-stars to Cs. So you're setting out at the very beginning, at this watershed of 16, for young people to feel that somehow they're not quite up to the mark. So the first premise I would actually say is young people might feel, some of them actually generally do feel, they've failed at 16, and actually they failed at the end of year 9 because they're starting their GCSE options. They know realistically they're not going to get A stars to C because they haven't had that sort of track record in school, and therefore they set off demotivated in the first place at that point. The second thing I'm going to say is they're not good predictors of future performance. And I say that because colleges have been quite successful in getting people through the examination machines over the last 9 years or so. That's not to say the qualifications are good qualifications. I accept what some of Alison Wolfe says, but we've been very good at getting people through their qualifications. But we have to benchmark every single 16, 17-year-old that comes into college every year on their English, maths and IT to see where they're up to, even if they've got GCSE grades. Now, I think they're pretty good predictors at the high grades. So if you get somebody with, 9 A stars, you can reckon they're pretty good. But if they've got a fair mixture of grades, to be honest, GCSEs are not a good predictor of future performance. They could flunk out at A-levels, or they could flunk out at GCSEs, or a young person with five GCSEs grade C could really fly at BTEC National. So they're not a good predictor necessarily. Insufficient careers education undertaken in secondary schools, when it comes down to it, this is not a criticism of secondary schools. Secondary schools are inspected on how high they can jump through the GCSE hoops. And if I was a parent, how does that meet my individual young person? I have a nephew, he's got Asperger's. There was no way he was ever going to get any GCSEs. It's a totally irrelevant concept for him. He's now 21 last week. He's got his first job, and it's taken him that long to get a job working, polishing cars and getting classic cars ready from the body shop for the customer going out. Now, our mission at Worcester College of Technology, when I was running it, was outstanding learning for successful lives. And it's about actually meeting the needs of the individual. For a young man who's got Asperger's to actually have a job who he loves, he's completely fixated, as you would be with Asperger's, about classic cars, but he loves it. And he's been trained, and he does have a bit of wobbly. He's got a very caring employer, but it's all been worked out on an individual basis. That didn't happen at school, and to be honest, it didn't happen at college. It happened through the Fisher Trust and connections. So the point I'm making is that there's insufficient dealing with the individual child at school from probably before years nine about what they're good at, what might stand in their way, how they're going to overcome their barriers, and therefore they start to make some choices about the directions they're going in the future. And then secondly, should we externally examine when people are ready? I mean, when you're 17, not every young person at 17 rushes out and takes a car driving test. Why do we do it with GCSEs? Should we not do stages rather than ages? When you're ready, you get examined and you pass. Hooray, you've got a qualification. Shouldn't we be setting up an expectation that every young person by the age of 24 will achieve a level 3 qualification in their area of their choice? And I'm not saying that level 3 should be equivalent or analogous, but if you decide you want to be a hairdresser, then you get a level 3 by the time you're 24. And that does mean that we need employers. So if you have the next slide, please. So I'm for Roots at 14. And I want to get rid of the academic and vocational divide as words, academic and vocational. And I'm suggesting there's almost a part-time and a full-time route. And we should have technical vocational, arts and humanities vocational, which means at 14 you may be going on a vocational route leading to an apprenticeship, which is long-time served, high quality, high content. But at 14 to 16, as we've heard from lots of speakers already, should be a generic curriculum contextualised in the area in which you're going. So the same maths you're doing at hairdressing is the same maths you're doing if you're doing the general route. You need a general full-time route because young people at 14, sometimes, no matter how much you talk to them, haven't got a clue because they just don't want to make that decision. And so you need a general full-time route and subjects from a list of valued qualifications that produce effective progression routes. So I'm with Wolf there, which is we don't want qualifications which lead nowhere. And my view of the English back is it's a bit of an irrelevance. However, I do believe in what Alison Wolf is saying, and I believe in that bit of the English back, and we should have a small core, no matter what you're doing, you must do English and maths right through to year 19, and probably with the science subject. We live in such a technical world these days, we probably need some science contextualised, to what people are going to do. Next slide, please. So young people should decide, in consultation with their parents and guardians, what employed routes and full-time study routes are available to them, and with the ability, they should have the ability to interchange at appropriate times and according to the labour market. If there is no jobs in the North East this week, then maybe the full-time option on a vocational stream is still an appropriate way to go, and we need to have that flexibility to be able to stay on track and get these high skills. A system based on good careers education, which is informed by local and national opportunities. You know, young people do need to be constantly talked to about what is available and where they can go and what they can do. And my view also is that all routes ultimately are vocational. There is no academic. Academic doesn't exist. It's a word set up by university dons. I don't know. Most young people need to make a living, don't they? Or everything they do, even if it's not directly vocational, it's indirectly vocational. So it's all vocational. And I'm going to tell you about Dom and Ollie. I've got a couple of minutes. I'm having some extension work done at home. And this is just to bring you really down to earth. And they're building me an orangery-type sort of conservatory on the back. Now, Dom and Ollie, certainly one, I think both came from the care and foster homes. And they went to a high school, which I'll remain nameless. And I said to them, how did you do at school? Did you leave school with any qualifications? No. What are they doing now? They're building up to £250,000 orangeries and conservatories on hotels, houses, and all the rest of it. Have they got any qualifications? Not a one. They've still got no qualifications. Would they like to have done better at school? Yes, they would have loved to have done better at school, but there was nothing of relevance to them at school at the time in what they wanted to do. They might have been bad lads as well, who knows. But they had very specific special needs. They hadn't come from good home backgrounds. And the question is, how does the system deal with the individual? And they wish they'd done better. And they're working with a man called Alan. Now, Alan, this is where you start to worry about the education system we've had over the last 15 years. Alan's in his late 40s and has a string of City and Girls from the local FE college in the 60s and 70s, or 70s and 80s, actually. And he's mentoring these young people and doing a fantastic job, and they're doing a great job. But he's a SME, so take that small to medium enterprise issue into case. He can't afford to send them to college, and he hasn't, you know, they're always living hand to mouth for the next conservatory job, the next orangery job. So how do you deal with that? And I'm not sure I've got an answer for that. And then just one other bit of story while I'm having this extension. We had a new kitchen done as well. And Tim and his brother are there. They're self-employed. They're fitting kitchens. This is a company, which I won't diss them because we're publicised. I could get sued. But this company says, we do full wet and electrical work kitchens. So these two guys turn up. They're very good kitchen fitters, by the way. But they have no qualifications in plumbing or electricity. They're, again, in their late 20s. They do all the electrical work and the plumbing work, and it all, apart from the odd little leak, it all seemed to work fine. And they came back and sorted the leak. Now, at the moment, plumbing does not require a license, wet plumbing doesn't require to be signed off, but electricals does. We had to go and find our own electrician to sign their electrics off. They'd done it right, but we had to get somebody to sign it off. Now, there was no 40-year-old with them. They were in their late 20s. So you do wonder where it's all gone wrong. For young people from, say, I suspect, the mid-90s through to about where we are now. So I'll leave it there, but essentially we must start to deal with the individual with an aspiration to get them all to level 3, whatever route they choose, and we must deal with that individual. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, that's an enormous amount to think about. We will have a little part of the debate now, and then we'll be joined by Graham Stewart, at about 12:15, the chair of the select committee, so that'll interrupt the debate a bit, but then we get back to the debate as well, and I'm sure Graham will have things to add to it. Just before we start, I would like to point out that... Not point out, I'm going to take chairman's role. I think we do have to be very, very careful indeed in conflating, and the stories you've just given, conflating qualifications with education, or indeed even with learning. It is perfectly possible, when we speak as an organisation that has 3 exam boards, to be well-educated and very good at what you do, even without a certificate from anybody. The problem comes, as you pointed out, that you've now had to get an electrician to check the electrics of the electrician you just had.